ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 4 entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, text 18. Shaila Droni Bhira Akridam Sarvartushu Gunandruma Dadhar Loka Palanam Eka Eva Prithak Gunan. Translation: the valleys between the mountains became fields of pleasure for Hiranyakashipu, by whose influence all the trees and plants produce flowers and fruits profusely in all seasons. The qualities of pouring water, drying and burning, which are all qualities of the three departmental heads of the universe, namely Indra, Vayu and Agni, were all directed by Hiranyakashipu alone, without assistance from the demigods. Purport by His Divine Grace Shri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is said in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tejovari Mridam Yatha Vinimaya. This material world is conducted by fire, water and earth, which combine and take shape. Here it is mentioned that the three modes of nature, Prithak Gunan, act under the direction of different demigods. For example, King Indra is in charge of pouring water, the demigod Vayu controls the air and dries up the water, whereas the demigod controlling fire burns everything. Hiranyakashipu, however, by dint of his austere performance of mystic yoga, became so powerful that he alone took charge of everything without assistance from the demigods. So we are continuing the incredible story, and very instructive too, of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj. Actually, when we hear about the incredible powers of the demoniac, the demons like Hiranyakashipu, Kans, etc., in one way the point is driven home. We know very clearly what the we are in awe of the kind of powers that they exhibited, and also we are perhaps, you know, even repulsed by the activities that they performed. But there is also a danger that because Hiranyakashipu types are, we only find them in the Bhagavatam, in the scriptures, and none of us would even think that we could even compare to his powers, because we hear about the siddhis and the influence controlling the three, controlling all the demigods, etc. So we don't relate really to our lives. We really think that it is something which we all agree. We are all on one side. We are all on the side of dharma. Everyone would be very ready to condemn. So when you have such a stark contrast, when we have a very, very distinct, almost black and white situation of dharma and adharma, then when we think of Duryodhan or we think of any of these demons, we clearly agree with what to do. But the danger is that we do not see the link with ourselves. Actually, all of us in this world, by the reason that we are here in this world, means that actually we are all little Hiranyakashipus. It may not suit our egos to feel that, you know, how come we are so small? But it is a fact that we are in a kind of disguise, Hiranyakashipu. And the reason is, if you see, See the activities of this powerful personality. When he was extraordinarily offended when his brother was killed. This is something which many of us, many people in the world, the first reaction is, if their brother is killed, in their opinion, unfairly, then the first thing we do is we start condemning. At the same time, when things are going well, just like when Lord Brahma came and gave him the benediction, he actually fell at his feet, he paid obeisances, we all do that. And then he sang glories about him. So at that time we also often say, you know, that when things go very well, we all say, God is great, God is very kind, you know, God is very merciful. Something happens and we really have a big victory over something. But as if to say that he is not kind when we don't get that, or he is not very glorious when he is not doing that. So why do we say it only at that time? So similarly, his procurement of siddhis, we don't even think of it because we don't even know how to do it. So the thing is that we do not compare ourselves with Hiranyakashipu because we do not have the capacity that he had. But we do not necessarily, we may not be necessarily genuinely condemning the demoniac mentality that existed. And the austerities he performed, we wouldn't even dream of performing it because anybody in this yoga at least would be able to do it. So we discard it immediately. But the fact remains that we do perform some austerities. Many people, even atheists will do it, even other materialists who are wanting to progress in material life, go to great extent. We hear such stories about austerities that are undertaken. And those austerities are taken, they don't compare an iota with this, but the path is the same. The austerity is to gain something material. We are also, when things go well, we are ready to go to Siddhivinayak Temple, Tirupati, Radha Gopinath, wherever. We may go to so many of the places where people go to give their thanks to the Lord because things go well. Even the education we follow, here you see Hiranyakashipu wanted the best for his son. He got the best pupil, teachers for his son, and they were experts. They were giving, but what did he want? He was upset at Prahlad and he was upset at Shanda Amarka because he wanted that the son is taught diplomacy, the art of negotiating, the material sciences understanding. So all that is also what is being pursued today in this world. Prabhupada refers to it in his lectures as the Sanda Amarka education. So, quoting from the Shastras, I mean, who would not want to quote from the Shastras, the way he could compose verses and say. So, everything that, also the prayers that he asked from Lord Brahma, he wanted to be immortal. Now, we may not say it externally, but every person in this world, given the choice, would not want to die. Also, he wanted, Hiranyakashipu asked that he not be conquered, that he should not be attacked by old age and disease. So these are the dreams that everybody has. It's just that we have not reached, or we will not reach that level that he even had. So even on a material level, we fall short. So that is the Kali Yuga, reflection of the Kali Yuga, that capability in this age is just a fraction of what it was earlier. But the mentality actually is of this demoniac mind. So actually a sincere devotee would always be trying to introspect and see where these tendencies come from. It is not that everyone has only these tendencies they have in gross proportions. It is just that we are having them, the seeds are there, and the fact that we are constantly driven by material desires are actually increasing those desires. So primarily this signifies the story of Hiranyakashipu and the Bhagavatam comparisons with the various demons, that there is so much emphasis in the externalities. For instance, the externals are more important than the internal. Internal meaning the sense of character, the values, morals. There is no place for neither morals or the father of morality. So we do not want to follow those dictates. While we want to, even in today's world, you see the externals, meaning even things like emotions, rather than what we actually genuinely feel inside, we are driven by it is a very hardened world. If you see the kind of dealings, people are greatly impersonal in their dealings with one another. The feelings are much less. But when you go to see the cinemas or the various shows, a lot of these depict the kind of fantasy world that they would like to be in. Like, all movies would end in a happy ending, isn't it? You will see that what they project, the boy meets girl and then they have many difficulties, but then they stay together and then they are very happy, everything goes fine. But then it ends there. So these movies become popular because that it in a way reflects what people want. But then you see the real life. Why is it that more than 50% of marriages end in divorce? Even in India it is becoming so prevalent. So every aspect of what the reality is different, and what people's aspirations are is different. So people, they go to, say, when they're seeing hoardings and things which make people, make them very popular, they are actually projecting what their own aspirations are. So Prabhupada said that today, when he was starting his movement, he was going to from door to door to so many people's homes and asking that, you know, if you have 3 sons or 4 sons, you can give one to the movement for me to train him as a Krishna conscious devotee. And everybody would say, no, Swamiji, why should we do it? Because there is no value. So this reflected, as he said, this reflected what people felt, that what will he do? He becomes, you know, he will be useless. He will not be any productive source for the world. How will he sustain himself? How will he sustain us? How will he carry on my business? How will he procreate and have many children? How will he enjoy? So our mentality stems from the understanding that what we need to do in this life is primarily make the best of whatever enjoyable circumstances are there. And Prabhupada constantly preached that you cannot make a permanent settlement here. And as we see our own life, we can then gradually understand the reality of what he said. Nothing is permanent, everything is temporary. And it is painful to the extent that we get attached to it. It can be pulled away from us, and then suddenly it is a shock to us. Whether it's the life of a dear one, maybe our own health, our wealth, the comfortable circumstances. So eventually, sometimes there is a temporary situation when things are going well, and we might feel that I am now quite comfortable, everything is going well. But if we were to misguide ourselves to think that that situation will remain, it's a matter of time before the situation will change. This is a guaranteed fact. It will change. And when it changes, we get bewildered, completely thrown into the wilderness, and we're unsettled. So unless we see the anchor of Krishna conscious life, wherein we not only accept but surrender to Krishna's proprietorship of everything that exists, and to understand that what our purpose is, and then so it's not that we would be against sense gratification. Prabhupada said, that if we can gratify senses in association with Krishna, then everything is fine. But unfortunately today, even in spite of the reality of everything being temporary and people get bewildered, but the foolishness is that more and more people would look at the people who have the external assets and want to go after that. So basically, it is like puna punas charvita charvitanam, that is chewing the chewed. That means the, you know, how the cow would chew, say, bamboo or sugar cane. We may choose the sugar cane juice and throw it away. And then somebody else picks it up and tries to extract some more juice. There's nothing left. So it's a futile attempt. So trying to enjoy getting the material benefits is really like chewing the chewed. That means it's actually the juice is not there, and yet we are trying to get that last drop. So that ends in frustration. And the biggest obstacle really would be sex life, because that is the utmost material enjoyment. In the material world, the highest enjoyment comes from sex life. And if you see that a sign of the progress of Kali Yuga and even the last few decades comes from the fact that so much emphasis is given on subtly and grossly on sexual or sensual pleasures. You know, there is an aggressive attempt to push more and more into not only if it is a dormant desire, it will become even more so. If it is already strong, then it becomes even stronger. And then when we see everybody is doing that and we think that that is the normal way, then it becomes very, very difficult, practically impossible for even the thought to cross our mind that to do something else is the correct thing. Unless we actually come in contact with Krishna consciousness in some form or the other, which brings us to the reality that actually that is not the truth, because we can see it in the span of a person's life, you know, what changes go through and then what he has to end with nothing. He will go from ashes to ashes and dust to dust. You come from nothing, you will go back into the body will be disintegrating and the soul will be left to face its karmic reactions. But even then, it becomes very difficult for us to to get away from that. So why is that so? And we can see from the example of Dhritarashtra, which could throw some light as to why this happens. Now Dhritarashtra, the reason is because Dhritarashtra was a very special soul. He was an exalted soul, personality. See his background. He was born in the son of the Shaktavish avatar of the Lord. He was Vedvyasa's son. His education and upbringing was with the likes of Vidura, and he was trained by none other than Bhishma. I mean, he had everything to go for being a perfect human being. And he had great understanding, great Shastric understanding also. He had an affection also for the Pandavas and for Krishna. He had direct association of Krishna. But nevertheless, the thing is that because he had very strong material attachment to his sons, especially his oldest son Duryodhan, so that it blinded him to the realities. So this is a story for us, that when we answer why are we not able to, when we can see what is correct, what we need to do, and we are not able to do it. So here the example is of the Dhritarashtra, because he just did not have the determination and he was completely covered by his attachment. It is interesting to read what Dhritarashtra actually spoke to Akrura, and Akrura has actually chastised him heavily, and after he's being chastised heavily for his conduct, because ultimately Dhritarashtra was just by his not willingness, his unwillingness to give up, he caused the Mahabharata. He could have saved it. But what Dhritarashtra replies to Akrura, he says, O master of charity, I can never be satiated by hearing your auspicious words. Indeed, I am like a mortal who has obtained the nectar of the gods. Even so, because my unsteady heart is prejudiced by affection for my sons, these pleasing words of yours cannot remain fixed in my heart, just as lightning cannot remain fixed in a cloud. Who can defy the injunction of the Supreme Lord who has descended in the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burdens? So, first, see the clarity with which he understands. The Trust has full understanding of the situation. He is not a fool in that sense, in that he's analyzed it completely, and to the extent that when he refers to Akrura as a master of charity, he understands also that all that Akrura is telling him, Akrura being his well-wisher and his good friend, he understands that these transcendental words are the greatest charity. This we understand when we came to Krishna consciousness and we've been told. It was an astonishing fact to hear that the highest act of welfare or charity is to give the transcendental knowledge to others. It's a revolutionary thought. Only when you come. Now, so Dhritarashtra is fully aware of that and he is complimenting that. And he says, I can never be satiated, means I can never be satisfied by hearing those auspicious words. Means I would like to hear them more and more. Indeed, I am like a mortal who has obtained the nectar of the gods. Even so, because my unsteady heart is prejudiced by affection for my sons. So he fully understands that he's biased, he's prejudiced, he's blinded by his sons. This is the clarity that he also has, that he's become unsteady. And he gives a fantastic example, analogy of that these pleasing words of yours cannot remain fixed in my heart, just as lightning cannot remain fixed in a cloud. Just like, you know, in a dark cloud in the rainy season, when the lightning flashes, lightning brings light. It brings, it dispels darkness completely, but only for a flash, just for a second, and then it goes. So, dispels darkness, it brings light, but it doesn't stay there, and then moves. So he says, I am clear with what you say, but I am not able to do anything because of my unsteady heart, which is because of my prejudices. But finally what he says, who can defy the injunction of the Supreme Lord who has descended in the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burdens? So this is really where we also have a danger, justification. After all this, he then puts it as fate. He says, it is too late for me, what can I do? He understood Duryodhan's actions are abominable, but then he says that this is what the Lord wanted. Who can go against Supreme Lord? He has come to the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burden. So what will happen. It is not in my hands. This is what he's saying. And this is really the lesson for all of us. In the lesson of Dhritarashtra, in the lesson of Hiranyakashipu, that this is nonsense. Because actually, the man is master of his own fate. We actually dictate our own fate by our actions. And what is fate? Fate is just the present and past and present activities which the repercussions of which we are going to face. So, this is even for devotees. We may hear the scriptures, we may understand the philosophy, but when things go wrong, we tend to justify or to analyze, to rationalize, rather than saying that I am wrong, I made a mistake and I need to rectify. And it is not the act itself. It may be the most abominable act, but if it is not rectified, then then there is no hope. Because the start of our Krishna consciousness would be to really understand our position. And to the extent that we have, not only we have material attachments, or we have such, like Dhritarashtra had for Duryodhan, we may have for so many things, we have to analyze that. But not to accept it and to justify it would be to stop the process of coming out of it. The process of coming out, or to come to let others give us the chance to give us the chance to get up, is really to be to have an open to be able to analyze our own weaknesses. This close-mindedness, or the comfort of thinking that something is happening beyond my control, is extremely dangerous. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, in a lecture many years ago, when he was talking of the same story, he talked of plunderers. He said, don't let plunderers loot your heart. Plunderers are robbers or thieves, and they generally come and take away, snatch away something which is very valuable. And here, what he was saying is that plunderers come in many forms. And even affection and attachment for material objects, materialistic people, is actually allowing plunderers to destroy our life. So two things that we read here. One is the attachment to people like Duryodhan, for instance, that is, you're blinded by it, but also having very high attachment to materialistic objects or people. Even if, so to develop detachment, which is necessary for start of Krishna consciousness, the detachment comes in two ways. One is attachment to saintly people, so that we gradually move away from the bad association. And the other is to detach ourselves from materialistic objects, as well as even devotees who may be materially attached. So non-devotees, of course, would be pursuing aggressively. But sometimes, maybe the devotees are also appreciating one aspect of Krishna consciousness. But then, if they have a very strong desire for material enjoyment and a strong attachment, then, you know, our propensity for devotional service, for spiritual life, will diminish. So here, Dhritarashtra knew everything. He knew that Akrura was telling him the truth, but he just could not give it up, and he also knew he was doomed. So in that sense, he is actually ahead of us, because he is much more aware of a situation. He has come to the stage of awareness, but not being able to act on it. If we are not even on the stage of awareness, then where is the question of taking help? So, we have to be careful. It could be that, as Maharaj mentioned in another lecture, when he was talking of Duryodhan, he said, there will be many disguised Duryodhans around us. And these disguised Duryodhans come in so many forms. They could be perhaps in the form of our children, could be in the form of our spouse, could be in a form of our parents. So this is not to say that we think that we are perfect and that we are suspicious of every small move, and that we start acting in a condescending and way. But it means that we have to be aware that anything that takes us away from the path of Krishna consciousness, anything that acts as an obstacle, and that too deliberately so, has to be seen for what it is. So oftentimes affection from family, if it is actually driving us away, for instance, sometimes families may not be happy with our Krishna conscious activities, with our struggles to follow the rules, regulations and the lifestyle. And there may be, at the same time, there is a lot of affection. So we have to be, that's what we have to be aware of, what the situation is. How we deal with it is another thing. We have to we don't be disrespectful or unkind, but we need to be firm and not wavering from the path that we have taken. So one is that we should not have any justification. We should be able to analyze. And the second is that we have to be aware of what disguises the Duryodhans in our life, who may not be so evil, but who may be there for as obstructions in our life would be. And Krishna says clearly that in Bhagavad Gita that I do not accept anyone's sins. So justifying and thinking that Krishna is creating it is not true. He is empowering us to act according to our desires. So if we have the wrong desires, he will allow us to do it. So really that is different from saying that he is in total control of every movement of ours. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that it is better to be referring to the bad association, he said that it is better to be in a pit of deadly snakes rather than be in the intimate association of those who are very, very materially attached. And he also, in his own life, just to set an example, even no less than a pure devotee like King Pratap Rudra, who was seeking an interview, a meeting with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he refused to see him, only because the king was in a position of great affluence and association with money and with so many queens and maidservants and so many other politicians. So to set an example, to make a point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to test him of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused. So the bottom line is that if we are going to be in our lives put in a situation, and most of us are interacting with the outside world, practically all of us, on a daily basis. So it may be that there are situations when we are not in control and we may be helpless. But then we have to be very cautious. We have to be very careful about whom we associate with, how much we associate with. There's a difference between intimate association and casual association. Where do we give our heart? Then we can ask the question, what is it that excites us, influences us? And that really will define it. It's something which we do it as a duty, something we do it to enhance our occupational situation such that it can help us in our devotional service. There's nothing wrong in that. But the awareness of where the dangers lie has to be very acute. We have to, and to sharpen that acute awareness is really why we need to strongly associate constantly, so that we are reminded of the need for our daily activities as a sadhak, where we are straying. Otherwise, we will not see that the danger of the outside world is really to exploit us. A robber may come and just put a gun and actually steal everything. So we condemn that. But we do not see if someone is there insidiously working his way and in the house and gradually stealing our propensity for Krishna consciousness. That is even more dangerous. So especially for those of us who have been blessed with, out of the causeless mercy, to have been given the chance. There are many, many examples that we can think of how without the motive of trying to serve Krishna and to understand our position, how relationships can disintegrate. For instance, typically in husband and wife, so often we see all over the world, when a divorce happens, what it means is that they have spent so many intimate moments, become so close, and they appear to have been loving each other and for years, and then they come to a stage when they just cannot stand being together. So when the each one stops being the object of sense gratification for the other, in one form or the other, whether it's bodily or materially, monetarily, then the parting starts. Fathers and sons also, brothers, so close, they are together in business, they do these Lakshmi pujas together, they will do everything, there's such like examples of, you know, that this is Ram and Bharat, or Ram and Lakshman together. And then finally it comes to court, and then they're like, each one thinks he's Ram and the other is Ravan, but the battles are going on. But we see this around us, so we can, it can happen to us, it may be happening to us, I mean, when we see, so where does this come? So what does it mean to us? It means that what in our life what we need to do is, what we have to counter outside influences we need to do, but what we need to strengthen and enhance our seedling desire for the taste that we have, that we have to protect and nurture it. So, and generally when crises come, that's the time when we really understand who actually is our friend. It only takes a crisis to really, otherwise when everything is going well, everybody would like to be our friends and are happy to deviate us. And when we have nothing, or when we have severe problems where we have no value to others, we are totally caught up in that, then that's the time we see that who are the ones, like in Dhritarashtra's case, Vidura came and stood with him. He was a pure devotee and he gave him the best of advice when Dhritarashtra had nothing. But when Dhritarashtra had everything, Duryodhan kicked him out, saying that you are influencing my father, and get out. And Dhritarashtra did not stop him. In spite of that, Vidur came, and so he was the voice of reason. In spite of being pushed out, he came. So we have to see who are the Viduras in our life, who are the ones who are actually, we may not appreciate them because of our weakness, not because of the situation, is that our consciousness is, therefore that discrimination is important. And even if we are in a weak situation, we should recognize who are those who can actually help us out. Many examples, of course, the brahmacharis have even more examples of how families have tried to stop them. And you know, even grihasthas actually, when people have such apprehensions, they feel that we will stop working and we will give up everything, all these years that we put in for you know, educating family, children and all that. I've done so much, now what will you do for me? I'll be left alone. Who's going to earn in the future? So these, they're basically worries which are centering around them. So when Srila Prabhupada told us, in fact, not only told, but he created the world of ISKCON, wherein we can help each other. He constantly said that you dovetail your senses, propensity for sense gratification, to service of Krishna. He didn't say that you completely deprive yourselves, because he knows the senses cannot be deprived, but they can be replaced by a superior taste. And he gave a very nice example of a finger. You know, a finger, if it just picks up the sweet ball, it doesn't get any benefit, either the sweet ball nor the finger. Only when the finger actually puts it into the stomach via the mouth, then the finger also gets the benefit, the stomach also gets the benefit. So our position is like that we have to constantly, we can enjoy, but if we are enjoying in the association of Krishna. Otherwise, we may actually end up, you know, thinking that the sense of discrimination would be lost. As I started out by saying that we can see the black, and then anything which is not black, even if it is dark grey, we will think that we are better off because we are not black. For instance, today, immediately when we see some terrorist activity, You know, we read every day in the papers now. Nowadays, you know, if even 25, 30 people are killed in Afghanistan, it comes perhaps in the fourth page, small column, because it's not a big news. Unfortunately, you can... So, every day, this is happening all over in India. But then we consider a terrorist as someone who may be standing with an AK-47 machine gun and waiting to shoot. And therefore, whoever is... We obviously cannot see ourselves or anyone whom we know in that situation. So we say that we are not terrorists. But actually, by Krishna's definition, we are terrorists. Because we are also going totally against his rules. And in fact, terrorizing so many millions of lives. Now, we don't recognize them because they may not be. They may be living entities who are inferior in material strength. They may be human beings who don't count because the establishment is what really dictates how the world order goes on. So we see it from that point of view. We are immediately ready to condemn a hijacker. He's hijacked the plane. But when we have hijacked Krishna's property, we don't consider that we are hijackers. Or we immediately condemn a rapist, which of course is a reprehensible act. But we don't see how we are raping the environment or... So there are gross activities which we do as a world itself, and then there are individual activities that we do ourselves. But our individual activities are also dictated by what we see how the world is going. So if we agree with that, and if we encourage it, and if we belong to it, if we actively pursue it, then we are also no less a terrorist or a hijacker or any of these, rather than putting that hapless fellow who's just, you know, who the whole world is after. But everybody, it gives us the impression that everyone else is fine. I'll just give one example. Nobody will agree that somebody comes and shoots innocent people. And then the whole world is looking at Hitler, for instance. Clearly, 6 million people were killed under his regime over whatever, 10, 15 years. But in 1973, there was a landmark judgment in the United States. It was a case called Roe versus Wade, where the U.S. Supreme Court, which had 9 justices, they voted 7-2, 7 in favor, and in favor of legalizing abortion. And since that time, there are not less than 40 million abortions every year, official count. Unofficial would be many times that, around the world. Now you can imagine how many, if you calculate in 35 years, how many billions of people have been, these are innocent children who have been killed. There's no question it is a straight murder. But because it is out of sight, out of mind, it is clinically flushed out, sanitized, you know, you just move it out of, you don't need to see it. So anyone who is associated with it, I mean, how many mothers are directly implicated? The fathers are implicated. Just in most cases, the majority of cases is for their sense gratification. So this is a case where we now imagine the karma and imagine the situation of the U.S. Some of the leading country in the world, the most intelligent people are in the U.S. Supreme Court justices, and when they give their in by one stroke of a pen, now imagine what an influence they have had. So we may not consider them on a par with some Stalin or Napoleon or some other people who have very grossly and crudely killed people. But there is no difference. So actually we see there are many acts like this which are very, very powerful and very insidious. So we as devotees have to see the difference between the subtle and the gross. And the subtle acts are much more difficult because we don't observe them. And same with our own things. We may say that we may follow the 4 regulative principles because that's something which would not be so difficult to follow. But the other subtle dangers which take us away from Krishna consciousness are very, very dangerous because we may not even observe them. We may not even notice them. And we will not allow others to tell. And we are quick to judge. For instance, we are constantly told that to criticize is the worst danger, because it will start destroying all that we have built up, that mad elephant offense. But it's difficult to analyze regularly, and are we criticizing or are we, and we may justify it. We may say, are we actually helping someone? So it is a razor's edge sword. Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness, devotee's life is on a razor's edge. That means you have to, a slight misstep, you can cut yourself. So you have to be very, very careful in all our activities. But that is the reason why it is deliberately made complex. Why? Because then to seek the answers, we will turn to people who have followed that path and are successful. So that is why the saintly association and learning from the pure devotees, the advanced devotees, is becomes mandatory. There will never be a situation when we can say that we don't need that. The minute we start feeling it is the first sign that there is danger. Even the most exalted devotees would be desperate for spiritual association. So what to speak of us who are just starting out in our spiritual lives? Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Shri Gaurang Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. We have heard many times that the Lord's mercy comes in many ways, and He's more merciful when He takes away rather than gives. But if we don't see that as the Lord's mercy, if we get more disturbed when things are taken away, then is it still, mercy? Because if we are not actually looking at it the right way.
No, it is quite understandable that initially our reactions would be in a very difficult situation when we are going through material trauma. But it can, you may have two feelings simultaneously, that you may go through traumatic situation, we may be internally rebelling and feeling why are we put into this. But side by side, we may also be, if we are hearing Krishna conscious katha, if we are associating with devotees, even though we may be having a lesser taste, but if we continue that process, no doubt that a time will come when we will actually start seeing it for what it is, that we will be grateful that it has happened. So it may not be initial, but if we just hang on, then, because no situation remains the same, and then we will actually see. So many devotees have realize in their lives that when they look back and say that the worst moments that they were going through, the most difficult times, which could have lasted even years, were actually, had it not happened, they wouldn't have come to Krishna consciousness, or many other things would not have happened. So Krishna himself says also that most people, there are four types, but 99% of the people come to Krishna consciousness also out of when they are great distress. So things which we cannot do, which we cannot control, we may not, and we may also be disturbed by it. That is understandable. But at the same time, if we do not discard the path which we are told, like Queen Kunti's prayers may not be appealing to us, it may not go to the core of our heart when we are at that moment. But inevitably, later on, time will come. If we continue that path, even if our chanting is disturbed, even if we are struggling, because Krishna always sees the struggle. He knows what is going to happen, but He wants to see whether we are struggling. So struggle is always there. Better to struggle for the right cause. So the effort that is needed, to fight back, however minuscule it is, like the squirrel's example, in Lord Ram's katha, trying to kick the sand, may be totally valueless in one sense. You can't even see any apparent value in the squirrel's effort to kick some sand into the. But nevertheless, the Lord appreciates. The same way, if you are making an effort, it may be futile, but then He will definitely reward. And then inevitably we will see that actually these were the turning points in our life. So the mercy, yes, mercy is always there. And we will, it's a question of whether we access that mercy or not. And that we may, if as long as we just, you know, hang on, we will inevitably be able to realize. And then we'll be grateful for it. I think there would be nobody in this world, nobody who, no devotee also, who would not have, there are some who may be in that exalted state, perhaps who may have had the strong call of God. But the vast majority turn to Krishna consciousness because of some events that have happened. And and even if the events happen after they've come to Krishna consciousness, it has strengthened them further, because then they have seen the stark reality of what the world is. And whatever Prabhupada says, whatever we read in the Bhagavatam, then becomes so much clearer when we then see that yes, it is futile.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. It was a very beautiful lecture. Like you said, that when our families have affection with us and when we are very attached, so it is difficult to overcome it. But then they want us to be on a very higher position, you know, monetarily, and we should be very settled in our future life. They expect such things from us. So how can we explain them ki no, it is not, you know, very good thing to go behind all those. It's very difficult to explain. I don't know how to do that.
See, here also the reactions of family members to a family member, one of the family members taking up to a Krishna consciousness, it is an understandable reaction. So, because this is actually a very, what Prabhupada has made it simpler for us is the principle, but nevertheless, to consider everything and build all relationships and act our life according to on a spiritual platform. That means everything we see it on the level of the soul rather than the body. It is such a revolutionary concept that it is it has many differences in its manifestations in external life, whether it is in how we in our occupation, how we deal with people, etc. So initially there will be a it almost certainly is that there is a great apprehension and worry. But in many cases then, partly by the way the devotee behaves, if you understand that where that problem is coming from, that they have, what is the anxiety? The anxiety is that, is he going to give up everything? Is he going to become irresponsible? Then we have to, by our own actions, if we are students, nowhere do we say that you give up your studies. Nowhere. So, even brahmacharis who come join the ashram, they are encouraged to complete their studies. Not only that, they work and then they come. But that is, time will tell whether how strong the calling is. So, when we are at a nascent stage, the budding stage, we have to redouble our effort, knowing that we actually represent the mission. However insignificant we are, our bad action will, we don't count, but they will immediately say, these Hare Krishnas are like this. Swamiji, I said. But if we do sincerely, then if not initially, over time, inevitably, people will appreciate that he's a devotee and see. Because when one thing I would say, the parents, the older generation, generally, also represent a certain culture which is also disappearing. People who were, you know, married in the 60s, 70s, they do have some traditional values. So in that sense, there is common ground. What they object to is, they have a certain concept of how it should be happening. Everything should be little and, you know, pious, actually. But not the way you want to do it. But we have to find that common ground. If you study hard, if you do well, and if you, and when they are also appalled by many of the things we are appalled by. The how people behave outside. Today's youngsters, they will be the first to say, okay, just go by this college and see how they, the way they dress, the way they talk. So that is, that means we are, that means we are, we agree with them. So, by just being studious, or by you know, sleeping on time, which is an impossibility with so many things, you know. So we have to be intelligent enough to know what it is appeals to them, and when that they see, and along with it, yes, we don't give up our chanting, we come to our temple. But if we act in a way which gives them also the worry that yes, he is actually now abandoning everything, then it will increase the worry. So it may take some time, but in most cases, in majority of the cases, it's action really that will determine how we can win them over time and then allay their fears that it's not affecting the studies, they're doing well, the kind of social circle they are in, the people whom, the friends, these are not people who are going to exploit them. This is something which the older generation has great worry when they see the external situation also. So just by being what they call a state guy, you know, you would actually win many points with your family.
Just 5-10 minutes and they just think that it is okay. They have that perception that going to the temple just 5-10 minutes is okay and you should come back after that. And that's what they think. So.
Yeah, therefore there will be some areas where, you know, they will... it's not that everything will be done. We have to try to convince them and say that I can be wasting my time. If I go just now with my friends out to a movie, you wouldn't mind. And we are away for 4 hours. So, see, there will... In every family, there are always areas of... there is love, but then there is always... inevitably, there will be discord. So we have to find the common ground and intelligently see that that gets enhanced in their eyes. So that the differences which are there, it will remain, but over time, it will start reducing. And in the few cases where it may be very hostile in future, then those are exceptional cases when they have to be dealt in an exceptional way. And then that determines our, you know, capacity to fight or not. But I think for the vast majority, usually doesn't come in that case.
Prabhu, I'll give one practical example. A problem in a gross life or a household life people face. As you said very clearly that whatever the points we are supposed to have to stay in a very perfect Krishna conscious life. Now, what happens is, we understand that this is what I am supposed to stay, with a proper character, with a proper, so to say, Krishna consciousness, with a gentleman attitude. But what a problem that happens is, a fear is always there on the back of the mind, that if I do it this way, I'll be on the street. I will be have nothing. I will not be able to survive myself. It will be difficult even to maintain my household expenditure also. Society will be completely rejecting me. And I will be nowhere. I know what is right, but I would not be able to do it because of that fear in the back of the mind. And due to that fear, we pull on and pull on and pull on. We don't compromise that. So now in that juncture, when we know that what is right, yet because we don't have that 100% committed faith that Krishna will take care of it. In that juncture which we are in between right now, what should we do?
But we have to examine first of all how true that feeling is. Is it just an illusion in our mind or a psychological feeling? So it doesn't say that we should not work hard. So ultimately, there are things which are not in our control. We'll have to accept what will happen. Say, the vast majority of the people may not be accepting God in their life. But are we saying that everybody progresses in material life? No. There are millions who are very intelligent, working very hard, and yet they are facing failures and problems. So where is the link between coming to accept Krishna consciousness and being on the street? So, in other words, those who are on the street, are they on the street today all over the world? Are they on the street because they took to God consciousness? And on the other end, are they those people who may have been successful? Are they successful and they don't accept Krishna consciousness? No, we have many cases of people who are doing well and still having Krishna. So the link, ultimately what will happen in our life is something which is already, which we'll have to face the karmas. So, it's the effort that counts, and we don't have to minimize that effort. If we have to put in whatever effort we can to work hard, we do work hard, and by being a devotee, our needs are also simplified. So that is a bigger advantage also comparatively with others. And then what Krishna has in mind, If it is to happen, it would have happened anyway. It would have happened irrespective of whether you joined the temple or not, or came to the temple. But here you have been given the armor of knowledge, of the ability to face that situation, if it was to come. You know, if a real distressing situation was to come, which is really unsettled us completely, that was already set in motion the day you were born. But now, here at least Krishna has been so merciful that he's given you the knowledge how to face it. You know, so many times devotees say that I would have been shattered if I was not in the Krishna class movement. So materially also, with all the effort, with everything that we do, something happens. Maybe not in his control and something goes. Then you can't blame being Krishna conscious taking into that. In other words, if you are not a devotee, how you say that I would not be on the street, but I would... If you say that, yes, I am completely giving up my work and I just want to live as a bum, but then you are not working as a... not living as a devotee then. The two don't go together. So that fear may come from a lack of faith then. Ultimately that faith we have, that we simplify our needs, and how much do we need to get by, and we do work for it. Everybody works, and that in almost all cases will be provided. And if it is not, it is something which was anyway in your karma and which would not have changed if you were not a devotee, as we see in so many millions of cases. So we need to ask why that fear is there. And is it just Maya speaking another word and telling us that don't go to the temple or don't follow this because you will you may be on the street? But where is the connection? Here, people who could make millions themselves, we have examples who can make millions themselves with all the background and qualification and experience, they're giving it up voluntarily and coming and saying, I don't want any material assets. We have that example. So that in the Brahmachari ashram in ISKCON, so that's one which gives us also comfort that here, you know, it is here. We may not be on that level, but nevertheless, it gives us the confidence that we can get by. Finally, how much do you need?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a very penetrating class. It really shook me up. What I wanted to ask was that after coming into Krishna consciousness, there is more a propensity for becoming complacent rather than being introspective. Because you mentioned in your class, and it came out very clearly, that one has got to be introspective and also realize that we can also be... We are mini Hiranyakashipus and mini Dhritarashtras. But how should one be introspective to the degree that we can be, you know, make positive progress in Krishna consciousness and also be a part of the preaching mission of the spiritual master and Prabhupada without being, you know, overwhelmed by the Hiranyakashipus of the world, lusty presidents of states, or, you know, greedy millionaires want to make more and more money? How not to be overwhelmed by such things and yet retain this approach?
I was hoping nobody would ask this question. Maybe actually the class is also for me. I have the same situation as you. I was quoting only what I heard from others. It's a struggle. So I think I'll ask Govind Prabhu to answer that question. How to overcome that struggle?
We can answer each other.
We help each other. I think it's just that we just recognize our weaknesses, and this complacency is one of the biggest danger when we start easing up. So sometimes, you know, when you let others play a major role in your life, then you should not object. Just like I was trying to get out of giving the class today. I tried my best, I gave various reasons. Even day before yesterday from Delhi, I phoned saying, told Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu that Chandamouli Maharaj is there and in the evening there is no lecture after, so he should give in the morning. So he said, he talked to Govind Prabhu, and Govind Prabhu said, it's his order that you have to give. So I was actually trying to wriggle out. But, and this happened because, you know, I don't read regularly, so I have always a problem, and then it takes me time to, so I have to kind of intellectually prepare rather than coming. So, but then I, at the end, at the back of my, I was hoping he said no, but then I knew that, okay, I have to accept it. So at least that part we have to do, that finally in such situations, we have to accept. So kicking or struggling, let others, you know, play a role. So recognizing it itself is the first step, and I guess after that, you know, we have to perhaps let other people play a role and lead us out of it.
Prabhuji, in your class you had mentioned that we all have to see who are the Viduras in our life. Now, of course, in this particular episode of Vidura and Dhritarashtra, Vidura, of course, was a relative of Dhritarashtra, and he knew that he was always meaning his welfare. But still, he would not accept it. Only when it came to a latest, last stage, then, you know, he accepted whatever Vidura had to say. So, we can see from this example that Dhritarashtra was actually in a very calamitous situation when he accepted. My question is that when we are also in a similar situation like Dhritarashtra, and we have Viduras who come into our lives and tell us that this is what is good for you and this is what you should do, still we do not accept that he is actually Vidura. We think that on the contrary, it is actually Duryodhan who is coming and you know, wanting our further to increase our misery. So how does one understand that actually no, it's actually meaning our welfare and not our detriment.
To the extent that we genuinely seek, you know, it's a matter of how sincerely we want this. And so it's not that when a calamity happens and suddenly we look around and, you know, we try to see, is he Vidur, is he? It won't happen. If you have led a life, you're constantly associated. If you want, you see, we are already living a certain lifestyle. We are associating more and more with devotees. We are, and associating doesn't just necessarily mean physically, but appreciating, agreeing, and trying to internalizing what we hear. So if that's happening, then when major calamities happen, we are more likely to turn to people who, when we hear various voices and our own desires also, we are more likely then to turn towards those who, where we have developed our faith. So yes, it's a good question, but then it means that we have to do a lot of preliminaries. It is not that, and Krishna also will arrange in such a way that when the calamities will also come, you know, oftentimes you will also have, you know, if you have already been in the shelter of devotees and the people who have gone through that, those many challenges, then we will be happy to turn towards them. It has also happened that, I mean, people have just come to the movement because of a calamity. That happens often. And but then after that, it's not just coming to the temple, but then they come in touch with X, Y, Z devotee, and then they start associating, and then everything that person says, it just goes right into the heart. So now, he may not have moved into the come to the temple thinking I'll meet a Vidura, but when a situation was arranged, he was already in a very softened up state. You know, he's been battered and bruised by the external things, and he was absolutely devastated. People, we hear stories of the people who are about to commit suicide, and then they come across a book. So many amazing it is that they've come across a devotee or a book, and then they paused, and then it totally changed their life, and now they're very happy. So it means that they that was the causeless mercy. But then they recognize that someone actually acted as their well-wisher much later. So it may be later, or if you are already a devotee, then we know. Then we have no excuses. We have to constantly associate. So that when really challenging times come, when we are totally bewildered and going through very difficult times, we would be at least able to turn to them. Because if after that we don't turn, that means it questions our sincerity in the first place. That means we have been coming here only for feasting on the beauty of the Lord and then enjoying the prasad and or maybe some superficial relation and going back. So the test will come when such a situation comes. Whom are you turning to? So actually it's an insurance really for us to cultivate relationships and be with others. Even if we have differences of approach, sometimes we may have differences because of our natures and styles. You know, we get along with some, we may not get along with some. But the fact that how can we not appreciate that someone has come to a Krishna consciousness effort? It is so difficult in one sense to make that step and so rare. So when we see that, even if we cannot understand how a devotee acts in some situation, but this we cannot not appreciate that. And that's the common level that we have, that we are together. Now, if we turn to someone or the other, that may be because of some comfort level, someone may be knowing my background or I'm able to relate to. But nevertheless, the associating devotees is necessary, and it is easy if we see it from this point that ultimately everybody has made this struggle in this association, in this movement, and we are all actually shoulder to shoulder, helping each other. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.